Good evening. Whoops. Well, good evening, everyone. From cold Colorado to, I don't know how it is by you, but it's probably warmer there by you. But anyway, my house is warm, so that's all I care about. I can just stay inside, do what I got to do. First, I'd like to say I'm just really honored to be here with all of you again. I'm just like in awe when I can look at the screen. You see somebody in Australia and somebody here and somebody there. I guess my generation, I'm still in awe that this can happen. Like, I can talk on my watch. My kids got me one of Dick Tracy. Some of you don't even know who that is, but I can talk on my darn watch. I never thought in my lifetime I would see that, but here it is. Well, I'd like to do first is the elders. They always tell us that when people get together, what you should first do is take the time to connect with each other. In our language, that's easier to describe than it is in English, but what it means by connecting is we have a word, and it's called netashniha. And what that word means is, I don't know if you've ever noticed, like when you look someone in the eye, your eye connects, shortly there's a feeling goes across. Then when that feeling goes across, you'll nod or acknowledge or smile. That's that feeling that we're talking about connecting. And what the elders say is that feeling must be there for us to transfer information back and forth. I know sometimes we get in relationships that feeling is not there, and the other person will say, "You're not listening to me." They can tell that connection's not there, or our children, or sponsors, sponsors sometimes pretty good at that. And so how we do that is we do that using a plant. It's called sage, and it grows all over the United States. And what we do is we pick the leaves off this sage plant. Then myself, I carry it in a little bag, kind of like this is what it looks like. And what the elders tell us is that we believe that wherever there's life, that's the creator. Or God is whatever your higher power is. So the creator can be in the sage, and then it can be in a flower, can be in a tree, can be in the, so we believe that the creator is everywhere. And so another way of saying that is that the center is everywhere. And so what we do is we have like a shell, and then we light this sage. And how you get the medicine, the trick with the plants is you need to know, how do you get the medicine out of the plant? And with this plant, it's done with, you light a fire, and then it comes out in the smoke. And then you have a feather, and then underneath the feather, when you run it through the smoke, the medicine, the connecting medicine, it connects to the feather. And then when you take this feather and you go, you throw it, then it goes, it knows no distance. So we have had done this, and people are saying, "I can smell it," and they're long, long ways away. And so what it's used for is for us to connect with one another. And usually that's easiest done in our AA fellowship, because that's what we're here for, is about connecting, with one another. And so, I like to start that way because my grandpa told me that's how I was supposed to do it. So I thank you for allowing me to start this meeting this way. My name is Don Coyas, and I am a member of the Mohican tribe. And our tribe in the old days was a clan system, and it still is there. So I was born for the Turtle Clan. And there's other clans, but you always take on the clan of your mom. So my mother comes from the Turtle Clan, and so we take on her clan. And then every clan has a purpose in the tribe, what you're supposed to, that you're supposed to do. And then my Indian name is Tantanka Wambli. That name was given to me by the elders. Our name, our Indian names are given through prayer. It means when you're given that name, it's like it guides your whole life. Like I have one daughter, her name is Kateri. And that word, it means one who does good deeds for another. And that's exactly what she does for, you can just tell she's always doing that, but that's the power of of our names. And so my grandpa always said, introduce yourself that way, because if there's some tribal member needs the services of your clan, then you'll know, because you just told him, what your clan is. And so I was taught to introduce myself that way. But above all of those names, I got to say, I'm an alcoholic. I better keep that one way top every other name, so I don't get too fancy. So I always say my name is Donna. I am an alcoholic, and everyone knows, what that means. And so I'm quite sure tonight I'm not going to tell you anything that you don't already know, because what I know about all of this, I got from you. You were the guys that taught me how to do it. And so a few years ago, I was asked to work with a group of Alaskan youth in Fairbanks, Alaska. And so they flew them in from the villages, and I was to help them with leadership training. And so anyway, we did the first day and it went okay. And then when it was time to quit, I closed down the meeting, and one of the young men stood up and he said, all the eagles stand up. And so in Alaska, they have two major clans. They have a raven clan and they have an eagle clan. And so a number of the kids stood up, and then that young man, he told a story of what he heard me say that day. And then he sat down, and they all sat down, and then a young girl, she stood up, she said, all the ravens stand up. So the other kids stood up, and she gave a recap of what she heard that day. And that wasn't on the agenda. And so it was kind of a surprise to me. So that night I was having a dinner with a sponsor, and I said, that wasn't on the agenda. I said, what was that about? And she said, well, in the old days, she said, the kids were always taught to be quiet. When any guests were in town, they didn't talk. And she said, what they did was at the end of the day, they would tell that guest what they heard go on that day, because what they want you to know is that your words didn't fall to the ground. And I just was so touched with that to think these young guys are doing this from a long time ago, that they would, they was listening is what they were saying, that they was being respectful. And so they said, each of them, what they heard. And so I kind of mentioned that story because I guess in this next 50 minutes or so is, I'm hopefully going to tell you that you're going to know that your words didn't fall to the ground. I listened from the very first meeting and listened to what you said, and I was listening, and I had some of that. You guys kicked my rear end in some things in all different ways, but eventually I continue to listen today. And so I guess the only thing I'm going to do is just let you know, I'm going to tell you back what you told me and how this is about staying sober. So one of the things you told me was, was I was to share, whenever I was asked, I was to share what happened, what that's like, and what it's like now. That's what I was supposed to do. And you told me I would probably know a lot about it because I was there, except when I had blackouts. I had to go find out from somebody what I was doing, because I didn't know about that. because I was a blackout drinker. And but the best way that I can tell you what happened was to tell you a story. And this story was given to me by a man named Don Pritz out of Denver. He was my sponsor, my second sponsor. And in our culture, it's like that young lady when she talked about the chicken and the eagle story when we first got in. She was saying, I got this story from you. She doesn't make it up. And so this story I'm going to tell you, I got this from Don Pritz. I heard it as a first meeting I heard him speak at. And it just like hit me in the stomach. And so when he was done, I talked to him and he said I could have this story. I could tell this story. And it tells a lot what happened. And it's a story about this boxing match. And then one corner, there was alcohol in the black trunks, and I'm in the other corner in the white trunks. And what they do in those matches is they save the very front row. They put a sign on there that says reserved. That's reserved for your family, because they want your family not to have no obstructions. They can see everything that's going on. So people started coming into the arena to watch the fight. And the referee called me and alcohol out there. And I don't know what there was about that alcohol, but that connectedness was there from the first time I looked in his eyes. I looked at his eyes and a darn feeling was right there. They touched me. And he was smiling and I was smiling. And a referee was giving us instructions, you know, hitting below the belt. And when I say break. And so first couple of rounds, I went too bad. You know, it was about boxing around. It wasn't too bad. But somewhere about the third round, I must have just ducked the wrong way. And he just really stung me a good one. And it hurt. And I was surprised that he could hit that hard. And so I kind of looked at him and he said, oh, that was a lucky punch. He said, you can whip me. And I knew on the inside, I knew he was telling me the truth. So then as a couple more rounds went on, pretty soon he was even hitting below the belt and the referee wasn't saying nothing. And I kept moving. Pretty soon my eye got swelled shut and my stomach was hurting. I was hurting pretty bad. And by the time round seven was coming there, I said, I better get a plan together. This alcohol is whooping me pretty good. So I sat there thinking about a strategy and I felt this tug on my arm and I looked down there and it's my son. And I looked at him, I says, well, what? And he said, Dad, he says, Mom says to tell you, just come on down. He said, that alcohol is really hurting you bad. We don't want to watch it no more. I said, come on down, let's just all go home. And I looked at him and I looked at the alcohol and I felt that feeling to alcohol. And I could watch his lips, he could lip sync, you know, you can whip me. And I believed that, darn. I could read his lips. And so I looked at my son and I said, listen, I said, I want you to go back, sit down. And I said, you tell your brothers and sisters to watch. I said, I got some old Indian moves I'm going to make on alcohol. Nobody knows it. I said, good on them. I said, you go watch your daddy just one more round. So went out there and bell rung and I went out there and the alcohol just kicked me in the head. And pretty soon I was right down on my stomach, on my hands and knees, and he was stomping on my head. And I couldn't wait for that bell to ring because I needed to break. You know, he just really was hurting me pretty bad. So I went back to that chair and I sit down there and I was just really trying to think of some moves, something I could do to whip this alcohol. And while I'm sitting there, I felt this little tug on my arm again. And I looked down there and this time it's my young daughter. And her little lip is quivering, you know, and her little brown face. And I looked at her and I says, what? And she said, Dad, she says, Mom says to tell you we're gonna go. You're not staying no more. She just was pleading. She says, please, Daddy, please, 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 come on down, let's all go. And I looked at her and I looked at alcohol and I said, You go tell your brothers and sisters. I said, one more round. I says, you just watch. I said, I'm going to make my moves. And so she cried. And she was going back to sitting down. And I got out there. And that alcohol just put me right on my stomach, just kicking me in the head and pounding me and doing whatever he wanted. And I wasn't watching my family to see, but when I looked over there, they was gone. The whole front row was empty. They couldn't watch it no more, you know. And so I had this moment of clarity. And I said, you know something? This alcohol has been lying. It can whip you. And so I left that arena. And I got up the next morning and I was thinking, I said, you know, you really shouldn't have been in an arena. You wasn't in good shape. And I said, you don't even eat good. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get myself in shape, you know. So I got to exercise. I went down to Barnes & Noble and I got me a self-help book and I got me some flute music and a candle, you know, to help me get my act back together. And so I was exercising, eating lettuce and all that good stuff that I'm supposed to be eating to be healthy. And about a month later, I started thinking, I said, you know something, I'm in shape now. Boy, I've been eating lettuce and I've been exercising and listening to flute music. I said, I wonder if the alcohol is there. So I went back down to the arena, walked in the door, and sure enough, there that dang alcohol was, arms on a rope. And I said, alcohol, I'm back. And he said, I knew you would be. He said, I know you got some moves that I ain't seen yet. And so I said, that's it. And so I went down towards the arena. And as I was getting through the ropes to get in there, he didn't even let me in the ropes. He just kicked me in the head as I was not looking. Jumped out of the arena and put the boots to me. And it didn't take no 10 rounds. It just took about 30 seconds and I was out. And so I left that arena and had a moment of clarity. And I got up the next morning and I started thinking. I said, you know what? I said, you know what happened was you went to the wrong bookstore. That's what happened. That was your mistake. So I go, some of you guys have been in an arena, I can tell, you know, exactly what's going on here. So anyway, I went and got me a different self-help book and different lettuce and stuff and got in shape again. And I got thinking, so I said, I'm going to go back to that arena. And I walked back to the arena, opened up the door, and alcohol wasn't there. He wasn't in the arena. And I said, I knew it. I said, he heard I was getting in shape. The alcohol was, you know, I scared him off. But what happened was he's standing behind the door. He jumped right up behind the door and just put me down right there. 10 seconds, I was out again. And so I had a moment of clarity. And this one is a line in the big book where it says, we must fully concede to our innermost selves that we have this alcohol. And that's what I was able to do. And that was on August 10th, 1978. I left that arena. It was 44 years ago. And I couldn't believe that I would put that booze over my kids. I did. I spent the rent money, the gas money, the food money. I lied. I cheated. All kinds of stuff. I couldn't believe that I was doing that. And so the only thing that I knew was I had heard about you guys in the AA, that you knew something about not drinking. And so I didn't tell nobody I was going to go. I went down to, I found out where the meeting was, and I went and scoped it out in the afternoon so I knew where it was. And in Colorado Springs, where I live, they got this street called Tejon Street. It's a very wide street, so the cars park diagonal, not parallel. And so I went down there a little before the meeting, and there was one slot right in front of that door to that meeting. And I said, oh, it must be a sign from God. So I said, I'm a driver on the block one time, and if that meeting slot's empty, that's a sign I'm supposed to go in there. And so I drove around the block, and everybody's parking on the other side of the street. That slot was empty. So I stopped my car, and I said, okay, I said, just to be doubly sure, I'm going to go around that block just one more time. And if that slot is there, it's a sign from God, I'm supposed to go in there. So I went around that block and I had my 1 foot on the brake, one on the gas pedal. And I went just slow as that dang old car I had would go. And sure enough, I come around there and that slot was there. So I parked in there and I walked upstairs to, I heard a noise where the meeting was. And I thought I'm just going to peek in there to see what was going on, you know. And I peeked around that corner and I looked in there and I said, oh my God, is this all white guys in there? I said, what the hell is a white guy going to show me about nothing? I didn't know until I worked the steps. I was pretty prejudiced, but at the time I didn't really know that because I come from a reservation. There's all kind of stuff went on, you know. And so I started to leave and that meeting had something they called it a greeter. And I guess the best way I could describe what happened there was it's like he had a shepherd's hook and he hooked around my neck and he slapped a cup of coffee in my hand. He went whoosh. And I was sitting in that darn table by all those white guys. And so I was too scared to leave. So I said, I ain't going to tell them nothing. So they went around, introduced themselves, and come to me and said, I ain't saying nothing. And then the meeting started. And I don't remember a lot from my first meeting. There was like three things. There's a couple of just irritated me. One was I couldn't believe these guys were telling on themselves about their weaknesses. You know, they were saying how they were like selfish and where I come from, you never would admit that to nobody, but they was telling it right out loud. The thing that made me the most upset was they were laughing all the time. Not like he. I mean, they were getting it on. Somebody would do something and there was knees slapping and I just irritated the crap out of me because I didn't see nothing funny about nothing. But the third thing was when I left there, when I took out that meeting, there was a feeling there. I had no idea what that feeling was. I'd never felt that feeling before. And I was trying to figure it out and I couldn't figure it out. Later on, I was to find out that's the feeling that you get the first time you ever come home. That's a feeling you get when you belong. You know what I mean? It's you go, oh my God, this is it. Never thought I would get this feeling from a bunch of white guys, like I belong there. But that's the way it was. And that feeling was so strong, I wanted to go back the second time. And I wanted to go back the third time. And I still didn't talk and I didn't say nothing, but I kept going back because I wanted that feeling. And eventually I found out that there was this big book. Then I found out you had such a thing as a sponsor. Somebody would help you in this recovery. So I asked this one man to be my sponsor, Frank McKibben, his name was. He's gone to the spirit world now, but he talked to me and he agreed. And one of the things he did was he picked up his big book and he showed me how many pages. It was 164 pages. And he said, that's the AA program. And he's 164 pages. He said, this ain't a program about slipping. That's not what's part of his design. And he said, if you're willing to do exactly what's in these 164 pages, he says, you'll never have to drink again. I tried everything to quit drinking. I could not. And I couldn't believe what he was saying, that there was something inside of 164 pages that if I did it, I wouldn't have to ever drink again. I was dying. I was close to death. I was in trouble with the law. All kinds of stuff was going on. My family was gone. Everything was gone. I was in trouble at work, you know, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, that man, he agreed to be my sponsor. And so my first instructions from him was he circled six meetings I was to attend. One was a big book, one's a traditions. There's this one meeting where there were just these all old A guys in there, really old. They were older than Bill Wilson, for Christ's sakes. And then you go in there and they each had their own chair. So I remember I went in there and I sat in this wrong chair. They said, get out of that chair. That's the Roy's chair. Well, go sit on the bench. So they each would sit the same place every time, you know, that meeting took place. And all of us young guys, we had to sit over on a bench, you know, it was sort of like that. But I was to go to this meeting. I was to say my name, I'm Don, I'm an alcoholic. Then he said, shut up. He said, you got nothing of any value to help anybody stay sober until you take the third step. Then he said, when you take the third step, you now got a higher power in your life. But until then, shut up. He said, don't be sharing. He was kind of a sarcastic kind of a guy. But anyway, then he took me through the steps. And he showed me on page 52, there's 9 areas I was to look at in terms of unmanageability in step 1. Then he showed me how to take those 9 areas into step 2, and I was to make 9 little mini visions, personal relationships. What would I look like if God was running my life and personal relationships and emotional nature? So he showed me how to do this thing called mind mapping, but it was a way to make 9 little mini visions. And then he took me through the whole, I call him my head sponsor. It was by that book. It was by no other book. It wasn't about the 12 and 12. He got mad at AA some years before, and he took the Monday night group and he went underground for 7 years in his basement. And he wouldn't let nobody else come in unless it was somebody he wanted to. And then in Indian country, and somebody does something, we have like a name, we name them, you know, but AA is kind of like that. You know, there's like West Side Gary and Slippery Sue or whatever. There's all these names, you know. And so all the locals, they named, when he went underground for that long, they named his group the God Squad. You know, that was kind of the joke that went around. Then they surfaced. The Monday night group surfaced, and then I was sponsored by him. So he took me through that work, and I couldn't believe when I read the promises of the fifth step after I did the fifth step. And he was very adamant about the fifth step was you had to tell everything, withholding nothing. The way he would talk, he'd say, withhold nothing, you get the spiritual cookie. If you hold something, you get no spiritual cookie. But I told everything. I told about my sexual abuse, things I never, ever, ever, ever in a million years would ever talk about. I had that written down, like you guys told me, and I told another man and God and myself what went on there. And so we went through that work. And then I was taught by these guys that I had to go through that work every year. Some people don't, but in this particular group, you go through every year. So the second year I went through it with Don Fritz. He was a guy in Denver. I call him my heart sponsor. He was way, way different than how Frank was. And I went through that. And so then I was about a little over three years sober, and I started to go crazy, and I got judgmental in my meetings, and I couldn't read the big book anymore, and I called my sponsor. He got stupid, and I couldn't do this 11-step. You know, I was doing my 11-step like a rosary. You know, 24 hours in the morning, ask God, direct your thing, and divorce this day, they're done. That's how I was doing my 11-step. In the car driving to work, you know, because I overslept or whatever. And I felt I was going to drink. That's how I could, something was really, really, really wrong. And so I went to see a man, his name was Johnny Looking Cloud. And he was a Lakota man. And he was a traditional in his beliefs in the Native community. But he also was a Catholic, very staunch Catholic. But he didn't see us 2 different ways. The way he had grown was, it was just all one for him. And so I went to see him, and he said, how long are you sober? Exactly. You know, he was, and I said, well, I think it was 3 years and 3 months or something like that. And he says, oh, he said, you're right where you're supposed to be. You know, when you're a bag of crap, the last thing you want to say here is you're right where you're supposed to be, you know. That's not where I was supposed to be. So he said, you know, we watched you when you come in. He said, most of us thought you wouldn't make it. He said, the way that you were, he said, we didn't think you would last very long, but he said, here you are. No, you're sober. And he said, all you do is he said, I listen to you like at the coffee break and stuff. You're talking about this is a white man's program. And he said, you're really prejudiced, you know. And he was talking to me like this. And he said, it's time that you bring the culture into these 12 steps. He said, it's not a white man's program. He says, this isn't about culture. It's about you not drinking. That's what it's about. And so he took a stick and he drew a circle in the ground. We were sitting in his backyard, and he said, you have left all the ways that your grandpa taught you. And he said, now this 12 steps is about helping you get that back. He said, what these 12 steps are about being in harmony with the Mother Earth. And he said, when you started drinking, he said, you went way out in space and you was lost. And he said, when you do the principle, admit, step one, honestly, he says, stops you drifting. And he said, these 12 steps are 12 gentle ways to bring you back to your culture, to bring you back to be in harmony with the Mother Earth. He said, that's what it's about. And when he started talking like that, I was starting to listen to him, because it was like something inside of me, you know, was in favor of what he was saying. And so he said, everything in the Creator's universe, Earth, has a cycle to it. Everything is cycles or seasons or systems, rotations, run by an intelligent system. And he said, the cycle of the human being is 4 years. And he said, that's true in sobriety. He said, your first year of sobriety, you just bud. You just got little buds. You don't know what the hell you're doing, but little buds are forming. And the older ones, they'll say, they know you're budding. They say, keep coming back, but they don't tell you. Then the second year, those buds unfold and you kind of get a shape now about what sobriety is about. Then he said, the third year, he said, now that's when there's like harvest and nuts and fruits from a tree, you know, it's just everybody's taking your picture and your foliage is out there. And you just say, I want it to be like this forever I ever arrived. I know what AA is about. Then he said, as the seasons come along, he said, and pretty soon the wind changes a little bit, gust of wind comes along. And he said, a few leaves fall off. And you say, oh, that's no big deal. I got lots of leaves. Week or so goes by, temperature changes a little bit, gust of wind comes by and blows about half of them away. Now you're getting spiritual. You say, oh, I better go to more meetings here. And I think I better read my book and check in with my sponsor a little bit better, you know, because, and then a couple more weeks go by and gust of wind comes along, blows about 3/4 of the leaves away. But the only spiritual thing you can think to say is like, shit, because you know the rest of the leaves is going too. Whatever it is, you don't matter what you do, it ain't staying. And he said, during this third to fourth year, he said, it's a winter time. And he said, during the winter time, there's three questions you can't answer. One is, why am I? You don't know your purpose. One is, who am I? You don't know your identity. Where am I going? You have no idea. And so he said, when you can't answer those questions, your group sucks, your sponsor's stupid, you can't do nothing. He said, you're just in winter time. That's the way sobriety is. And he says, it'll happen again, year 7 to 8. It'll happen again, 11 to 12. It'll happen again, 15 to 16. Then he says, when you get to be 16, as he said, that one is different. He said, because what happens is you travel through space to another set of 16 years. And he said, that one can kind of be dangerous if you don't know that you're making that move, because you get depressed, you do dumb things, you know, the way he described it. I made a video. There's one on YouTube. It's called Seasons of Recovery. So I'm not going to go into any of the more details, but check it out and it'll explain, you know, all these seasons. But I was driving back home and I started to cry. And I thought I was doing something wrong. I didn't know about seasons. I thought, because I said shit and God in the same sentence, God says, okay, take your program away. You know, that's how I thought. But what I've learned about AA is there's like this wisdom cloud. You know, you come into your first year sobriety and that cloud tells you some things that you need to know to make it through that year. And you kind of think you know everything, but you don't. And I see why my sponsor says you got to go through the steps again, that puts you under that cloud again. So next time you go through this, it tells you some other things that you might have missed, you know, that first year. And then I found out by the time you're 14 or 15, it's telling you some other stuff that you had no idea what the hell that would have been about in your first, your second year anyway. And then when you're 30 years sober, it's still telling you things. That's just kind of the way, you know, that it is. And so I found out that this program, same steps, no changing in the words, don't have to change a big book. And it tells you the next things that you need to know from that wisdom cloud. It's just amazing to see how that is. So then Johnny Looking Cloud, he's the one that took me through he started speaking about circles and cycles. Then the next thing he had me do is he had me put the 12 steps in a circle. He said, inside of a salmon is a blueprint that tells the salmon everything it's supposed to do. It's written that salmon knows to go hang out in the ocean 4 years. At the end of 4 years, it knows to come back to the darn river where it was born. It knows it's got to do that. It searches for that. Then it's got to watch out for the bears. It swims up the river and it lays its eggs and it dies. And then it's the cycle of life. And so what he always told me was, he says, you had that blueprint too. And he said, and your blueprint is these 12 principles of AA. The only thing is you don't have to do them because you've been made choice. So if you want to lie, go ahead. Then there's consequences, but you don't have to lie. But your blueprint is happy when you lie. That there's principle, laws, and values are written inside of you. And he said, what this program does is it helps you discover inside of you the thing you should have been listening to all along, is how he described it. And so what he taught me was the season. That's what the cloud gave me. It wasn't before, but all of a sudden it says, oh, by the way, Don, God's not mad, you're not slipping, you're in winter time. And so be aware it's going to happen again when you're 7 to 8. You're going to go through this thing, even knowing it. It's like winter time. You can know about winter. The best thing is to believe in winter, somebody tells you, because if you're out in your bikini in January and it starts snowing and it's 30 below, then you can't be bitching because, I didn't know about it, you know. Just quit whining about it, because that's the way it is. That's the way it is in recovery. There's a season that we all follow, you see, and that's just the way that it is. And so then what I found out next from him is he taught me some good things about step 6 and step 7. And so, you know, that list of defects you get out of the inventory. He taught me how to make a tobacco tie. And it's a red cloth like this. And you put it in your hand and you take tobacco and then you put it in this red cloth. So you make one tobacco tie for each defect. So say my defect, I got anger. So then I make that tobacco tie and then it kind of looks like this. I tie it up into a little bundle. And every defect I make a tobacco tie for it out of that column from inventory. That's step 6. So as I'm putting that in there, I'm willing to let go of that defect to have it taken away. And I make the next one, I make the next one. Then for step 7, you take these tobacco ties, you build a fire, like a campfire. then you take the tobacco tie and through a ceremony, you throw that tobacco tie into the fire and you ask God to take it. And it'll sit there for a while and all of a sudden it'll go poof, it'll just burst into flames. And then you take the next and ask God to take it using the fire to help him. And it does something to you when you see it just burst into flames like that. You go, whoa, maybe this stuff is really, really working. So I'll kind of close with what I learned about steps 10 and 11 from him. The key that I learned about that is, this is the way he said, the creator made a universe as polarity. Plus, minus, here, there, boy, girl, up, down. And only two places our thoughts can go. One is love and one is fear. Can't go no other place, either love or fear. So he said, when you do that morning 11th step, consider your plans for the day, ask God to direct your thinking, divorce the state from self-pity, dishonest self-seeking motives. That is pushing you, placing you in the love system. Then it says, go think. So you don't need to, you go think. Then when you go into the fear system, there's two little flags the book says will happen. One is you'll sense irritation or doubt. What that means is you left the love system and you've drifted into the fear system. Now, what I found out was my character defects don't act alone. When I go into that fear system, I get irritated. Then irritation looks over at that bench where all the character defects are and says, hey, anger, come on in here. I think I got him going. So anger comes in there and says, oh, look at that. And then this makes me run my mouth and say something I shouldn't be saying. And he says, okay, we got him going. And then anger looks back and says, hey, justification, come on over. I think I got her going. Come on in. And we'll make him feel like it's right. And by the time I get done, I got a whole damn team of character defects in there that I'm dealing with. When I first started doing this, I didn't remember to pause until late at night. And I said, oh my God, I was supposed to do that this morning. That's when I should have paused. And I wasn't remembering it. And so the other thing I found out was, with ones that I love, like football and pro football, I have a specialty team. Like with my wife or whatever, the whole team comes in. Six or seven defects, I just let her have it, or I let whoever, have it. But what I found out is the pause, where that exists, it exists in the fear system. It's like a disc over in the fear system. So all I got to do when I pause and I step on that disc, at that moment, no more defects. The team is not building no more. And what I do is I ask God for the right thought or action according to the instructions in the book. And that disc floats back over to the edge of the fear system into the love system. That's how I get back there. It's through the pause. That makes some sense. Now, how long does it take me to build a team? 15 seconds at the most. By the time I'm irritated, till I'm running my mouth, till I say what I shouldn't say, that it don't take long. A friend of mine, he made me a 10-step bracelet. And on that 10-step bracelet, he wrote those words, the first 5 seconds are golden. That means my goal is to pause in the first 5 seconds because I want to stop building the team. Because the team makes me make amends because I run my mouth, and I do all of those types of things. So I didn't know that till the cloud told me. Meetings, you guys, sharing your experience, strength, and hope. I thought character defects just were, I thought just anger worked alone. Anger just don't work alone. It's got a buddy system. It calls in these people. And since I've been doing that practice, I got this bracelet and I snap it, it's like a practice thing that I do. And I feel myself irritated or doubtful. I snap that bracelet and it reminds me, pause is stop yourself talk. How do you stop yourself talk? In your self-talk, you tell yourself, shut up. And maybe you can add other words more meaningful to your person, so you know that you might listen a little bit better. And so that's what I've learned from you guys. There's nothing new. I'm going to the work again right now, and I'm doing it a little bit different than I've done it before. And say the truth, it's just kicking my ass is what it's doing. I'm seeing things that I didn't see before. And sometimes I just have to laugh. I would think longer term sobriety would get easier, but it's not my experience. It's not necessarily easier. It's sort of like Johnny Looking Cloud. He had this table on his window. And in Colorado, they got these river rocks. They're flat and they're round. And so he'd paint white on one side, black on the other. And one day I asked him about what that was. And he said, well, when I first went through the work, he said, I turned over the big rocks from black to white. And I thought I got them all. Then he said, the next time I went through the work, what I found out, the smaller rocks are now my big rocks. He said, and man, those mothers are hard to find sometimes because, I got rationalized and I mean them. And I think that's what happened to me going through the work this time. I found these little rocks. I was thinking, why the hell did you even go through it? You was happy. Why did you want to step into this 12 step and mess everything up again? You know, but I know how that is. That's what I've agreed to do. When I finished that first 5-5 step, I made a promise to myself that these 12 steps would be my way of life. And if somebody gave me something fancy to do, like 7 habits of this, if I could not reconcile it in those 12 steps, I wouldn't do it. I would say the 12 steps, they taught me my culture. The things I know about ceremonies, the 12 steps taught me what that means. It showed me the spiritual ties back, you know, to what all that is. So now I understand the culture, you know, thanks to the 12 steps and, you know, thanks to you guys. And so I just want to thank you for allowing me to share back what you taught me. I don't think there's anything new. Maybe some of you let the team build. That might be a helpful one. Pause is what the key is. Pause quickly to do that. So with that, I'll just close. I want to say thank you very much for allowing me to share with all of you today.